Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's podcast. Today is Wednesday, June 27th, 2012, and today we are once again talking about this new trade agreement being negotiated between the United States and several nations called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP for short. But today we have something pretty exciting to look at, and that is an article that just came out in Foreign Affairs magazine. And if you are a longtime sufferer of these podcasts, you know that Foreign Affairs is the magazine of the Council on Foreign Relations, which I have a subscription to, and my copy just arrived in my mailbox a couple of days ago. So we have an article here hot off the press. This article is entitled Trading Up in Asia, and as a subtitle, Why the United States Needs the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's by a gentleman named Bernard K. Gordon. And Mr. Gordon is Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of New Hampshire. And he has a book coming out soon about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And he writes on behalf of the Council on Foreign Relations about why the United States needs this partnership. Now, he references in here the Doha round of global trade talks, D-O-H-A, Doha. Well, that, of course, is a city in Qatar on the Emirate coast in the Middle East, and that is the city where the World Trade Organization's talks first began back in 2001. These talks are usually named after the city where they are held. Well, those World Trade Organization talks are still going on, which Mr. Gordon here laments. Let me quote something for you from the first part of his article. He says, as the Doha round of global trade talks nears its 12th year with no end in sight, the negotiations have all but failed. Frustrated with Doha's stagnation and eager to expand trade and secure alliances, the United States has signed a series of bilateral free trade agreements, culminating in last year's pacts with Colombia, Panama, and South Korea. Well, he says, we've been frustrated by the fact that we have been unable to link trade together for the whole world, to essentially take down trade barriers to the American markets for the entire world. And frustrated by that, we've decided to enter into bilateral or country-by-country agreements, and we've done that with Colombia, Panama, and South Korea. Yes, we know what we did with South Korea. I think that was the bilateral agreement where we agreed that the South Koreans could sell as many cars here in the United States as they wanted, but we cannot sell any in Korea. I think that was the nature of that agreement. Well, he says here, Mr. Gordon, that the bilateral approach does not offer much promise. He says there's been a standoff. There's problems in Congress. There's political problems with all this stuff. In the House of Representatives, pro-trade advocates in the business community, which includes most Republicans, he says. That's interesting. And on the other side, House Democrats, includes most unions and U.S. car producers, they fought hard against this deal because they knew what happened with cars in South Korea. Well, why would we be interested in this? We know why the CFR might be interested in it, but the United States, he is complimentary of the Obama administration here, except in the area where Obama is now famous, and that is in the area of transparency. But here's his description of what would happen if we were to pass this Trans-Pacific Partnership. He says, quote, the TPP will represent one of the world's most expansive trade agreements, and if Canada, Mexico, and especially Japan, all of which expressed interest in joining the negotiations last November, also signed the agreement, the TPP will add billions to the U.S. economy and, get this, folks, solidify Washington's political, financial, and military commitment to the Pacific for days to come. Let me say that again. Solidify Washington's political, financial, and military commitment to the Pacific for days to come. And therein lies the reason, the real reason, for the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Solidify America's commitment, political, financial, and military, to the Pacific for years to come. Well, this is not directed at China or anything, is it? Here he gets critical of the Obama administration. He says the relative secrecy surrounding the TPP talks has only deepened these political anxieties. He says there are a lot of people against this, and the fact that the Obama administration has decided to conduct negotiations in secret adds to that feeling of anxiety about it. He says one of the things he's critical about is the intellectual property demands of the United States on these other countries, that they, you know, there's internet controls, there's other items of intellectual property. The American companies are concerned about their intellectual property rights being open to these other countries, and they are, of course, very concerned about it from our standpoint. He says here, Mr. Gordon, that is, that the resulting failure, he says, if these talks don't move forward and the Obama administration isn't more transparent, the resulting failure would represent a major defeat for the Obama administration and undermine its goal of ensuring a long-term presence for the U.S. in the Asia-Pacific region. Well, we got that going for us. It's possible that these talks could break down, and that would be a defeat for the Obama administration. He says, now here, he describes the agreement a little bit. He says, quoting again, as currently proposed, the TPP would go well beyond categories traditionally included in trade agreements. So it's much more expansive than the normal free trade agreements. So keep in mind, when he says trade agreements, he means free trade agreements. To begin with, over the next decade, it would gradually remove all tariffs on trade between member states. So it would take away our opportunity to ever raise funds through tariffs. It would affect almost all forms of economic interaction among its members, covering policies on investment and government procurement, labor, environmental standards, agriculture, intellectual property, state-owned and small, medium-sized enterprises, businesses anywhere between 50 and 500 employees. In other words, virtually everything, all economic life is affected by this in our country. This is a radical redefinition of our entire economic world. He goes on to say that it cannot achieve this potential without including Japan, and Japan, of course, has expressed strong interest to be included. He says including Japan would mean that the agreement covered 40% of global GDP and added $60 billion to the U.S. export market. Well, in theory, included Japan would mean free trade between America and Japan, meaning Japanese markets are open to American companies, but somehow it never seems to work out that way. Our markets are open, but theirs are not so open. That's the way it usually ends up working out. Continuing to quote, the Obama administration has made the TPP the keystone of its trade policy, and it is doing all it can to shape the agreement into U.S. favor. Well, isn't that interesting? This is the keystone. This is essentially what this does is it takes a back door around the stalled World Trade Organization talks. And keep in mind that this is not a treaty that has to be approved by the Senate. It simply has to be signed by the representatives of the governments involved. It's an agreement, not a treaty. This is how they do these things. And then the American economy is open for the entire world to exploit. This is how it goes. This is what they mean when they say trade. He says here, he describes it, quote, Americans have long been indifferent to trade. Once again, folks, that means free trade, believing that it benefits mainly foreigners, costs them jobs, and contributes to the U.S. trade deficit. So why in the world would we believe something like that? That's interesting, but nevertheless, this is where we are with free trade. There are other critics of this trade organization. Some people believe that it will restrict the movement of pharmaceuticals and necessary drugs between borders. Doctors Without Borders, for example, accused the U.S. government of inserting provisions into the agreement that would interfere with low-cost delivery of malaria and HIV/AIDS medicines to developing nations. Why would we do that? Well, I don't know. Maybe Bill Gates could shed some light on it. He's big into low-cost drugs now. Demetrius Marantis, Deputy U.S. Trade Representative, said his office strongly disagreed with Doctors Without Borders. Yeah, I guess it does. Strongly disagrees. Well, Mr. Gordon here, in conclusion, he says more transparency and better information about the negotiating process could help counter such rumors. Well, we know the Obama administration is all about transparency, don't we? I mean, after all, it's the most transparent organization in U.S. history. It is very, very transparent indeed, and becoming more so every single day. It is, according to Gary Horlick, a prominent trade lawyer and former U.S. trade official. He says this is the least transparent trade negotiation he has ever seen. He says that it's not transparent at all. It is not open. In fact, members in the Senate are upset about it. Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, has actually issued a introduced a bill, a legislation in the Senate that would require disclosure of the negotiating process as soon as it is disclosed to other people. So if they're going to let these foreigners see the stuff, Senator Wyden thinks we should be able to see it after they do. But the Obama administration says, no, you don't need to do that. Here it goes once again. Here it goes. This is the deal right here, folks. Quoting, if the TPP negotiations bear fruit, the U.S. will become far stronger economically, politically over the next generation. A deal that included Japan would essentially result in a free trade agreement between Washington and Tokyo, representing the long-sought third opening of Japan and the affirmation of U.S. power in the Pacific. Affirmation of U.S. power in the Pacific. Well, there you have it, folks. That is the way it is this day in the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations, and why the Council on Foreign Relations feels like it's a good thing. Well, here's my feeling about it. Generally, as you know, I'm against these free trade agreements. I think they outsource U.S. jobs, destroy U.S. manufacturing, create tremendous trade deficits and foreign accumulations of U.S. funds that can never be repaid. Those are some of the reasons why I oppose them. And the fact that the Council on Foreign Relations is in favor of it, that is all you need, folks. That's all you need. That's the way I see it. June 27th, 2012. This is Darrell Castle. Until next time, folks, thanks for listening.